I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into The Memo on this Wednesday, August the 31st. I'm Brad Locke, along with W. Derek Russell. It's the last day of August, Derek. That means summer's over?
It does not. Dang it. Who put a question mark on the teleprompter? You know he reads anything he says.
I'm Brad Locke?
That is a question.
What?
Is far from over.
We've got another 3 weeks until fall technically begins.
November 12th.
That'll be about when it begins for us.
That's when it might turn 70.
Get 2 weeks of fall, and then it's winter.
It was nice for about 40 minutes this morning.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Well, it's supposed to cool off the next couple of days.
And by nice, I mean I didn't open the door and already have trouble breathing.
Well, that's a plus.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not easy being fat in Mississippi in the summer. It's just not. People are like, what are you, jumping rope in the attic? And I was like, no, I just walked outside.
If you did that, you'd die.
Tried to pick up the newspaper. I get winded just sitting here talking about being fat.
I hate summer. I said on Facebook the other day that summer's like that guy that shows up at the party who's fun for a little while, but then he keeps getting drunker and drunker until finally everyone just wants him to leave, but he won't. But he still thinks he's the life of the party. I got over summer June.
That's art imitating life right there for you, isn't it?
Shut up. Summer just needs to leave the party, but it's not. He refuses. He thinks everything's great.
Brad just needs to leave the party.
And what did you say about winter?
What did I say about winter?
It was pretty witty.
It was kind of poetic, wasn't it?
It was.
Because I actually like winter.
You said winter gets a bad rap.
Fall is my favorite.
Obviously. Fall is definitely my favorite.
October's the best.
I'd probably go with winter, then spring, then summer. It's a distant fourth. Summer's like 10th. It's my 10th favorite season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like winter just fine. I think I said it's misunderstood. It can be a little harsh at times, but on the whole, he's pretty chill. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
And plus, he brings Christmas to us.
How is that witty?
I don't know. I didn't say witty. I said poetic.
He said witty.
Well,
I remembered it being better than I was.
Art is subjective.
Like most things Brad said, we remember them more fondly than...
I don't know. What did
An Academy Awards in memoriam.
Here it is. What did I say?
Here you go. The world is waiting to hear this.
I said no. Winter is misunderstood. He comes off as aloof, but really he's just chill. Sometimes a bit harsh, but ultimately he just wants to remind you you're alive. And also he brings Christmas. That's what I wrote on my Facebook page.
You drink a lot, don't you?
Not that much.
Oh, okay. Just making sure. Hemingway over here.
Nah.
Bah, what is that?
I'd have to drink a heck of a lot more to
reach Hemingway levels.
To reach Hemingway levels, and I probably would not write.
That's why the first ship you get at AA is called the Hemingway ship. I don't know that. It just sounded funny to me. What do we got on today's show, Brad?
We've got Zach Orsborn coming on talking about the library and its 75th anniversary that it's celebrating. We've got Bobby Harrison from Jackson talking about the revenue problems that the state continues to have. Caleb Bedillion is going to update us on the lawsuit, the mayor, Jason Shelton, getting sued.
Sued.
How do you pronounce that, Chris?
Words sued. Lost all meaning.
Sued?
Sued.
I've never been sued. That's good.
Sued. Day's not over yet, Brad.
We've also got Jenna Parsons going to talk food because it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday.
So, hey, cool.
She went out there when I came in. I'm gonna bet there's no food. What do you think?
I bet she didn't bring us anything again. Well, speaking of food, today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, formerly known as Palmer's. The locally owned grocery store still offers high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. Visit Shoppers Value Foods on East Main.
In Tupelo.
All right, let's do a show.
Zach Orsborn joining us this morning to discuss the 75th anniversary of the Lee County Library. That's like three of your lifetimes.
Yeah, almost.
Almost. Kinda. That's only like one and a half of Brad's lifetimes, but that's okay. You did an advanced story. One thing I found interesting in your story, and it seems like I've known this before just in growing up around here, 75 years, the board has only featured 36 board members,
right?
Which I think is pretty cool. That just speaks to, I think, how engaged those individuals were with the organization.
Right, and the celebration is this Friday, September 2nd at 5:30 p.m.
What are they? I mean, just kind of a historical look back. What's on tap for Friday?
Yeah. So what they're going to do is they're going to honor the 36 board members, and if they've passed on, they're going to have their family members to accept the. They're giving out little medals.
Nice.
And they're going to just have everybody in a room and just celebrate. I think they're going to have some city people in there. Lee County Board of Supervisors are going to be there too to help honor. And the thing about the board members, they serve, they can serve two terms, and the terms are 5 years. So most of them have stayed on two terms, which is 10 years. And I talked to Frances Williams.
Mm-hmm.
She used to be a school teacher at Tupelo High School, and she's used the library since she moved to Tupelo. In the 70s, right after the new structure was built. And she was on the board from 2004 to 2014. And right as she was about to leave, they started talking about building a new facility. And basically what I talked about in the story is kind of how the library is changing and how it's grown over the years.
Yeah. Obviously, large debate over the past decade of whether or not the building would... whether or not the organization would relocate or not. And I'm sure that's something that will still be ongoing in the years to come. You talked to several different people as well. As Dr. Williams, you also talked to...
Lewis Whitfield,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has very good memories of the library, it seems like, of both of these individuals having moved to Tupelo.
Yeah.
I went and did my homework there a lot
mm-hmm.
as a child.
Lewis Whitfield, he's the senior vice president of the Create Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
He moved to Tupelo 7 years after the establishment of the Lee County Library in 1941. And at the time, the city purchased the former home of United States Representative John Allen. And it's in the same location as it is now, but it was just a house. And he would walk back and forth from school, and he would always go in the library and... he loved to read and stuff like that. And he joined the board in the 70s and served on until 1982. And he said their main concern on the board was they were always worried about money and money flow and getting money in and funding and stuff like that. And it's still kind of the same today because they just had state budget cuts.
Yeah.
And the library is trying to think of ways to cover that. And so far they've... the Friends of the Library have helped out with that, with the book sales, and they're trying to get new grants and stuff like that.
There's always different events going on there. It's funny, we talked about the J.J. Rogers building here the other day, and I said it's one of my favorite buildings in Tupelo.
Yeah.
Second one would be Lee County Library. Structurally, it's always neat to me, the layout of the facility, and it in good ways, I don't mean this poorly, in good ways, it hasn't really changed since I was a kid. It's very familiar to me, and... it's a comfortable place, and
they still have the 70s nameplates.
Yeah, it's all really
stuff
cool.
Like that.
This Friday, 5:30 p.m. at the Lee County Library, open to the public. 75th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Definitely don't want to miss that. Zach, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Derek.
And be sure to check out the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan. New episodes coming every Wednesday. So we've got one dropping this afternoon. Be sure to check it out for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. And it's also a webcast about 11 a.m. every Wednesday. So if you've missed it today, go back and watch it at djournal.com. And MSU and Ole Miss sports fans, be sure to check out Double Coverage with Logan Lowry and Parrish Alford. Talking about what's going on with the Rebels and the Bulldogs every Thursday afternoon, a new episode comes down. You can check it out for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or doublecoverage.djournal.com. The guy is talking about the football squads getting ready for their impending season opener, so be sure to give that a listen. Hey, wake up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's News Break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video. Shows will be posted every Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. You can watch them for free at any time at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. Stay informed on the latest happenings in your community in an easily digestible format. Let's go down to Jackson now and bring in Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison. Bobby, how you doing, man?
Hey, Brad, how you doing?
I'm all right, sir. Let's talk about state revenue collections. They're They're still not in a good place, are they, Bobby? The July report that finally came through shows that the state collected $11.5 million less this past July than in July of 2015. So this trend just keeps going the wrong way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's going the wrong way and just putting the state leaders in a bigger budget hole. Now, it's important to remember this is July was the first month of the new budget, new fiscal year.
Right.
And last year they had to make, the governor had to make two rounds of cuts and dip into the rainy day fund three times to deal with the budget revenue shortfall. It's continuing this year. And just a side note, they're also struggling with the new accounting system they put in place during the 2016 legislative session. July was the first month they used that. Normally they have the revenue report finished, legislative budget committee staff had it finished within the first week of the next month, but this time they didn't get finished till Monday, which was the 27th, 28th. So they're struggling right now on all fronts.
Jeez.
And this is just the first month, so it's they got time to make up the shortfall, but it's not getting off to a good start.
Yeah, nearly every category of tax collections that were down from the previous July, including the two largest, sales tax was down 2.4%, personal income tax is down 3.9%. Corporate income tax collections did go up, though, Bobby, 14.5%. So, there's one bright spot, I suppose.
Yeah, that was a bright spot. It's important to remember, corporate income taxes were way down for the past budget year. They were way down. So that was a bright spot. But the two big ones, which are the personal income tax collections and the sales tax collection, 7% on most retail items, they make up, the two together probably make up 60 and 70% of the total revenue collections. They were both down, so that was bad news. And it's also important to remember, Brad, that you're $11 million down after the first month. In addition, some people estimate that the legislature during the 2016 session appropriated as much as $130 million more than they would have gotten if the revenue came in as projected, as expected.
Right.
So the leadership concedes they at least appropriated $56 million too much. Others say it's as much as $130 million. So so look at it that way. They're in a huge budget hole, and unless something turns around, Governor Bryant's probably going to have to make another round of budget cuts. Sometimes in the fall, we'll see what happens. But at this point, that's a distinct possibility.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what they can do going forward. I know they got these working groups that they're meeting every month to try to modify or improve the state's tax structure and revenue collection and all that. So I don't know what they can do at this point though.
Yeah, and also important to note that the largest tax cut in the state's history was passed during the 2016 session. That doesn't go into effect for a couple of years. So when that thing starts being enacted over a multi-year time, that could even have a even more dire consequence on revenue collections.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit here, Bobby, and talk about the new Appropriations Committee chairman. That's John Reed. He was appointed. He's a Republican from Goshen. And we'll take the post over from Herb Frierson, who is now going to be the commissioner for the Department of Revenue. Is that right?
Yeah. He was appointed by Governor Bryant to that post. It was a popular appointment by a number of Frierson was, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, he was a popular legislator, and most people think he'll do a good job as commissioner of Department of Revenue, collecting those, trying to collect those taxes we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. For those who don't know, what exactly is the main objective of the House Appropriations Committee chairman that John Reed will be doing?
He's the lead House guy on writing the budget, as along with his counterpart in the Senate Appropriations Chair, who is Buck Clark, a Republican from Hollandale. Reed's just been kind of he's a veteran legislator. He's served in a number of different areas. He was vice chair of appropriations under Billy McCoy and Tim Ford. He served as chairman of a number of different committees. This year, I think he's been the chair of this term of the conservation committee. Now somebody would name somebody to replace him there. So they've when you go when somebody leaves, that creates a domino effect, and there's several appointments. But
yeah,
he's not a flashy guy, but he's well respected, and I think this the coast is really excited about this because the BP oil spill money, the settlement the state got from that. You know, yeah, there's controversy right now about whether that money, how that money should be spent. Right. At least the state shared. Some people think it should be spent throughout the state. The coast legislators argue it should be refined solely to being spent on the coast. So so they're excited to get a committee appointment in such a key position to have a say in that.
And I know you noted in your story that Matt Huddleston, a representative from up in our neck of the woods in Pontotoc, was maybe a candidate for that position, but they ultimately went with Reed, obviously, who does have more experience, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Huddleston's the current vice chair, and he and Reed have a he's a lot like Reed, and neither one of them are flashy, but both are well respected, and I think they'll probably work well together. As you know, Huddleston would continue the position of the vice chair, and you know, it's I'm sure Northeast Mississippi would like to have gotten that position. You know, we went our area of the state went through a heyday in the late 80s and through all the way through the 90s and up to the 2000s. Early 2000, there were just, you know, a litany of key committee chairs from my area, whether it was a, you know, appropriations chair, ways and means chair, finance chair, all the key chairs. You know, we don't have that level. Of course, for 24 years, the Speaker of the House came from Prince County in terms of Billy McCoy and Tim Ford. So, right. So we don't have that level of influence anymore, but we still have a considerable influence. I guess the most influential member we have right now is, you know, Ways and Means Chair Jeff Smith from Columbus, and he represents a significant portion of Monroe County. I guess he's the most significant Northeast Mississippi legislator at this point.
All right. Well, good stuff, Bobby. You can find Bobby's stories that we talked about here, the revenue collections and the new House Appropriations Chair. Find those in Tuesday's Journal or at djournal.com. Follow Bobby on Twitter at BobbyHarrison9. Bobby, appreciate your time.
All right, thank y'all.
And be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. Watch live on Monday afternoons about 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. The 2016 legislative session is over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol. Time now for today's news memo, and for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Mississippi State University has stopped flying the state flag, and so has the Mississippi University for Women. MSU announced Tuesday that University President Mark Keenum approved a plan by the deans to remove the flag from most parts of the campus. The state flag, which prominently features the Confederate battle emblem, is being replaced by larger American flags. The Mississippi flag has been criticized as a symbol of racial oppression, and five other state universities have opted to stop flying it. Keenum told MSU student paper The Reflector that there were multiple reasons for the flag's removal, which was done quietly. MUW President Jim Borsig said he took action after campus groups discussed the flag last year, and he encouraged them to lobby elected officials. He also cited the 50th anniversary of the university's integration and Mississippi's 2017 bicentennial. The University of Mississippi and the University of Southern Mississippi both removed state flags from their respective campuses last year. Three historically black universities removed flags earlier. Delta State University is the only Mississippi public university still flying the flag.
Tracking criminals could become more expensive for local law enforcement agencies. Changes to a statewide computer network could force those agencies to pay in an extra $5,000 a year to access the National Index of Criminal Justice Information. AT&T is in the process of revamping the statewide network to new technology. That means agencies wanting to access the National Crime Information Center must be ready for the new system by October. Clay Johnson of Mississippi Department of Public Safety said each agency will have to replace their routers and upgrade dedicated circuits. The new circuit will cost about $5,800 per year. Law enforcement around the country use NCIC to input information on arrest warrants, stolen property, wanted people, missing individuals, and criminal histories. While most small counties will have to adjust their budgets to handle to the new costs, Lee County Administrator Sean Thompson said the county already purchases enough bandwidth from AT&T to handle the increased requirements.
Tupelo Mayor Jason Shelton has proposed a city budget for next year with total general fund expenses of about $35.5 million and a 3% pay increase for full-time city employees. City revenue is expected to rise during the 2016-17 fiscal year. Property values have increased, and that will drive up the money collected in property taxes. Shelton noted that sales tax revenue also continues to show robust growth, even as the statewide economy has been sluggish. The budget includes a small projected surplus of about $38,000. That money will be held in reserve.
Lee County School District Special Education Director Kathy Dickerson is ready to take her passion for special needs students to the state level. Dickerson was elected vice president of the Mississippi Council for Exceptional Children. She was voted into the position by her peers. CEC is a national organization with state branches that promotes advocacy for special education and reviews special education policy. The council also holds conferences for special education teachers and provides professional development and training. Dickerson said her first task as vice president will be planning Mississippi's annual CEC conference. She was the keynote speaker at last year's state conference.
Vandalism at a Chickasaw County cemetery has both law enforcement and the community shaking their heads. The Chickasaw County Sheriff's Department is looking for who's responsible for breaking and tipping over approximately 13 tombstones at Asbury Cemetery in Van Vliet sometime between August 16th and 23rd. Chickasaw County Sheriff James Myers says the vandalism doesn't make any sense, noting that someone had to do quite a bit of work to break and knock over the tombstones. He said it appears someone used something heavy to break the markers. Van Vliet resident Ruth Chick Carter said some of the markers were old sandstone headstones, which no one makes anymore, and they can't be repaired. Anyone with information on the incident should contact the Chickasaw County Sheriff's Department at 456-9411, call 911, or contact Crime Stoppers at 1-800-773-8477. Need to remind you that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, a locally owned grocery store on East Main. The store recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and the employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third generation owners of the East Tupelo grocery store that was founded in 1957. The Palmer brothers have teamed up with last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program, so the store now sells its groceries 10% over cost, and that's allowed it to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. Along with the name change came a refreshing of the interior, new signs, and better parking. So visit Shoppers Value Foods for high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. And we've unfortunately not going to be able to bring you Caleb Bedillion today. He is busy with work, and he was going to come on to talk with us about the lawsuit against Tupelo Mayor Jason Shelton, which we can talk about a little bit. He had a good story about it in today's journal. Kenneth Mayfield, a local attorney who has been involved in some of these protests against the city stemming from the Antoine Ronnie Shumpert shooting by a Tupelo policeman.
He's on the Coalition of Concerned Pastors as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Coalition of Concerned Pastors and Leaders, I think that's their official name. Anyway, he's suing the mayor for libel and slander, citing some comments he made in emails. And he also said he claims that Shelton has made those comments verbally in conversations with Kenneth. So it's an interesting story. We did speak with Caleb spoke with a notable law professor at Ole Miss who doesn't think there's much of a chance of Mayfield, I guess, of being successful in this. I mean, he said because the threshold is so high, especially when if Kenneth Mayfield is considered a public figure.
Yeah, I'll point out, just to be perfectly clear on his comments, you know, he didn't know the specifics of this case, and you know, certainly didn't want to weigh in on this case in particular. But his point was that it is a high threshold to meet.
Yeah,
so whether or not Mayfield can meet that threshold, but it's not an easy threshold to meet, particularly given a public debate, I think he said, and a public figure.
Yeah, just generally speaking, in this, and you know, when it comes to libel and slander, it is hard to do. And again, I believe Caleb got a hold of some of the emails, and you know, these were private emails. They were not something that were initially made public. I think that part of it as well. I know Brad Morris, who's representing Shelton, said he's going to file a motion to dismiss. So he says the lawsuit's without merit. Kenneth Mayfield says that he's not doing it for money, which is, you know, Shelton in the emails apparently accused Mayfield of trying to take advantage of this whole Shumpert situation for financial gain. And Mayfield said he's just doing this to protect his reputation, not really doing it to get a payday or anything like that. So that's the gist of the story, which you can read about. And Caleb wrote it much better than I tried to explain it just now, but in today's journal or at djournal.com. So there you go.
closing out this Wednesday is one of our favorite guests to join us here on The Memo, Jenna Parsons.
Hello, Derek.
You just make us all sit up a little bit straighter in here and be on our game a little bit more.
Still didn't bring any food, though.
That's rude. And you should rethink how you talk to her if you ever want her to bring food in here.
I forget about it. I really do.
She forgets about you, Brad.
Yeah, I know.
It's okay. You're forgettable.
I should have brought y'all some of the potatoes that are in this column.
The Smoky Mountain potatoes?
Yes, because I don't believe I've heard either one of you say you don't like potatoes. I
love potatoes.
Who doesn't like potatoes?
Don't think I've heard either one of you say you don't like bacon.
Oh, love bacon.
That's all this is.
Bacon's my favorite food.
Potatoes, bacon, and salt and pepper. The original recipe calls for fatback, but...
It's not healthy.
It was my wrestling name in high school.
It also said you could substitute... You're supposed to cook it in a Dutch oven over a fireplace, over, you know, glowing embers and whatnot, but for us modern day cooks, you can put it in your regular oven and put a little bit of bacon over it, let them cook for about an hour. So good.
What's so special about them?
They are tender on the inside and crispy on the outside, and they're flavored with bacon.
So they're baked potatoes?
They're baked, yes. Yeah, it's okay. Like baking potatoes, and you just cut them up and put them into a Dutch oven and put some bacon over the top of them, salt and pepper, put the top on.
Sounds amazing.
They are very good to be so simple.
Well, there you go.
And they're very good leftover, too. I've had them twice as leftovers.
And like the good reporter you are, I'm sure you put the recipe there for all to
I put the recipe in my column for all to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did husband Charlie think of?
Actually, he's the one that found the recipe. It's there from this this cookbook that we bought in the Smoky Mountains and 10 years ago, I guess. And I can always tell when he's jonesing for another trip back to the mountains because he pulls out this cookbook.
And starts flipping through it.
Starts flipping through it and reading to me about ramps and things that are poke salad, things that are mountain food. And this was one of the recipes. And
he ever call you poke salad, Jenna?
No, perhaps if my middle name were Ann or Annie, he might.
Might do it.
It's Lee, so.
Your cook of the week was not named Annie either. But she is 96.
She is 96. No, her name is Laverne, but her family calls her Myrna, which is a combination of Vern and Mama. And nobody calls her. I guess friends call her Miss Laverne. And when you're 96, you've earned Miss Laverne. But she was a pistol. She was full of energy and had the most wonderful sense of humor when Thomas Wells, the photographer, got there to take her picture. And he got everything set up in the kitchen, and he said, okay, Miss Laverne, now come in here, and we're going to take your picture. And she said, well, what do I need to do? And he said, well, you just have a seat and look pretty. And she said, that won't be a problem.
Nice. I tell you this much right now, a quick way to get to my heart is tea cakes.
Oh, gosh, these were so good. And, you know, and I'm not much of a sweets eater.
I'm not either, but something about those.
Oh, they were actually, I've had probably, you know, 200 different tea cakes and doing this job for 14 years. These were really like little cakes and just, you know, not too sweet the way tea cakes are supposed to be. They're not supposed to be cloying, but I ate one there. And then she sent me back with a bag of them, and she sent back a couple of bags for some of the guys that work here that she knows. One is a nephew and his nephew's friend.
Catch that? That's just funny to me. There's an ad for Smoky Mountain travel.
No.
Did Charlie lay the page out?
At the bottom of the food section, you can hitch a ride on Barkley Travel to a Smoky Mountain fall getaway. I think Charlie's jonesing hard.
That's hilarious. No, Chelsea actually laid out the food page, but I will have to point that out to Charlie.
That's kismet, I believe.
I guess so. Is kismet the same as serendipity?
It means good fortune, right?
Serendipitous is chance. Kismet
Lucky
is...
Lucky
chance. Yeah,
I heard the word kismet last night, and I heard it again today, and we'll hear it all the rest of the week.
I'm just going to start walking behind your desk and whispering, kismet.
Well, let's see which one of us can get it into a story first.
What?
You
write, you don't write much.
Yes, you do. You write a little bit.
Like once every 3 months.
See if you can work it into news break there, Brad.
I do blog. Maybe I can work it into crime reports.
There you go. Easy enough. All right, Jenna. Well, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, another great show in the books, Derek.
I don't want to blow our own horn or anything, but it was definitely a show.
It was a darn good show, my man.
Sure.
Heck yeah, it was.
We tell ourselves that, we'll make ourselves feel better.
Yeah. Well, anyway, today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods. You can get the ingredients for the recipes in today's food section like that. So what was it called? The Jenna had
Smoky Mountain potatoes.
Smoky Mountain potatoes.
Yeah, all you need is salt, pepper, potatoes, and bacon. I think you can find all that at Shoppers Value Foods on East Main Street in Tupelo.
I bet you can. The Palmer brothers have worked hard on improving every area of the store to make customers' experiences even better than before and to save them money on quality name brand products. So visit the locally owned grocery store on East Main Street. You'll love the look, love the prices, and get helped by the same people you knew at Palmer's.
Mm-hmm.
And where can they find us, Derek?
Online.
You do this every time now.
Yeah, I do.
Jerk.
Just to tick you off.
Where online specifically, Derek?
Well, Twitter.
The Twitter.com?
Yeah.
/ come on.
The name of our Twitter handle.
Chris.
@ D-Journal Memo.
Can you reach across and thump him in the head?
I need to spoon feed everything for you there, big boy. @ D-Journal Memo is the Twitter account handle you're looking for. Also online at memo.djournal.com and wherever you can find podcasts.
iTunes.
We don't have to do all the work for you. Come on, do a little bit yourself.
Yeah, so go Google Podcasts.
Yeah, Google Podcasts. You'll find us.
If you have an iPhone, go in your podcast app. It's already on there.
It's a little purple.
Click on it.
Thing with the microphone. Type in the memo. It's free.
You'll get, and every time a new episode drops,
you'll
get notified.
We would not make you pay to listen to Brad Locke all day.
That would be cruel and unusual punishment.
That is.
If you're listening to me voluntarily, it's on
$10
you.
To listen to the podcast, $20 to quit listening to the podcast. back tomorrow for one more round, Bradley?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Last one of the week tomorrow.
Be sure to check out the stories we talked about on today's episode online at djournal.com, and we'll see you on Thursday.